Thank you. I think everyone in deserved that break. We're now going to the trustees' review of the structure and effectiveness. We have Yael presenting. Floor is yours.
Okay, good morning everyone. The purpose of my presentation is to give you the highlights of the trustees' request for views on the governance and structure of the organization. This is an exercise we've been doing every now and then ever since the organization has been established, and we're hoping that this time the review actually doesn't reopen a whole set of fundamental questions, but we're trying to be very focused. And in this session, I will try to focus and read to you what I think will be mostly relevant to you. As you may have followed the organization, these reviews are quite helpful in a couple of ways. First of all, there are some very good ideas that come out of these reviews in terms of improving our structure, improving the way we operate. People often raise issues that touch directly on our legitimacy, so it's important to be attentive to what people have to say. And so we have some fundamental changes in our governance due to the as a result of these reviews. And our process have changed dramatically as a result of the last review. So we wrote a due process handbook, which is now our kind of bible of how we operate. And I think it helps in people understanding how we operate and feeling part of the system. This review, we're trying to also introduce a proposal to reduce the number of reviews, because we feel that the platform should remain a bit more stable, the structure should not be reconfigured every time when needed, and the main thing we need to focus going forward is our strategy. So going directly to slide 5 is where we identified for you the main focus of this review. The themes that we are consulting on is, first of all, questions around ensuring the relevance of IFRS going forward. We want to also focus on consistency of application and what does the foundation can do more in order to enable the standards to be truly global, not just in theory but also in practice. And it's a growing challenge given the widespread of adopting jurisdictions and the very different type of markets that are using our standards at the same time. And then we have a couple of questions on governance, which I'll focus later. So slide 6, we try to bring to you the main question on relevance, which is basically, what is the role of the ISB and what is the role of IFRS in the wider landscape of corporate reporting and the development in corporate reporting. So in the document, we explain what do we do now, which is basically to maintain a good and close dialogue with the main actors in this area. So we have, for example, a memorandum of understanding with the International Integrated Reporting Council, which enables us also to participate in the corporate reporting dialogue and make sure that the relevant organizations that are active in this space, we have a close contact with them. Where is our challenge? Our challenge lies with the fact that we identify a genuine demand from investors and others for reporting and disclosure solutions for a whole range of corporate reporting topics. And there seems to be a lot or too many or very different standard setting bodies and organizations and regulators that require a whole set of information and not enough clarity around what is the real need for investors, and how can we ensure also that all these streams of work are coordinated and are operated under a good due process, because we have identified around 30 bodies that deal with corporate reporting in some way or other, but they are very diverse, and some of them have very, if not at all, any kind of due process. Some of them are very, very conservative regulators. So there's a very wide diversity, and some people think that and there should be some sort of a centralized organization or institution that takes it under their its umbrella, and people are pointing at us in some cases. And we have basically the alternative to either ignore this or to monitor what's going on in this landscape, to try to influence it, to try to participate in coordination, and we can also take the view that we need to lead the development of corporate reporting. And these are all very different solutions that the organization is facing. And I think it's really important to understand what is people's expectations. And basically, if I summarize this down to two main alternatives, is whether we should stick to our trade of financial reporting and just do what we're expert in, or should we expand our remit, expand our role, and in that sense, expand the resources that we need to invest in this, expand our expertise, and become a much more integral and general purpose organization. So this is a very important question for us, because I think the risk is that if the ISB does not respond to these developments, as we identify here, we may become irrelevant. Not in the sense of an organizational survival strategy, but more, do we provide a product that is really useful and relevant to investors around the world? And this is a very important question for us in this context, and I think this group is quite important for us to understand your views in this area. So, I don't know, Barbara, if you want to stop or continue at the end, and then, okay, so this is a key, I think, question for this group. Another key question for this group, and I move to slide 7, is what is the impact of technology
I'd like to stop you, because I think we might better address the questions, because they're of quite different nature.
Okay, no problem.
Shall we discuss this first question?
I actually think the two main questions I'd like to do with this group is this one and the next one. The others are less, but if we can possibly
these
two, yes, that would be the best.
Okay, so the question is, does the CMEC have any views or comments on the role that the ISB should play in this arena, taking into account the IRC and the corporate reporting dialogue? You could even mention more organizations, IAASB, there are many organizations.
The list is really long. United Nations Global Compact, United Nations, sustainability, corporate governance, you name it.
GRI,
Sustainability Accounting Standards Board, Climate Disclosure Standards Board, international public, so a lot of organizations that deal with a whole range of sustainability, environmental, climate, all these sets of issues.
Okay. Paul, please.
Thank you. Speaking as somebody who interacts with quite a large number of those different organizations, there's quite a personal temptation in bringing them all together and reducing the workload.
You're conflicted.
But my view is you should stick to your knitting. I mean, we had a discussion earlier about the agenda, and it doesn't seem to me as though this organisation lacks things that need to be done in the core business. And, you know, getting that core business done and delivered would add so much value to the financial markets and so much clarity that actually not thinking about things beyond financial reporting has to be the right thing for certainly the next little while, but I suspect for the long while too.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Check, please.
I have similar views. I have done some work on the integrated reporting things, taking a look at some South African company, globally integrated reporting. My feeling is that it was useful for people that were not familiar at all with these companies. But when you look at the financial information they were disclosing, there were the level of disclosure and notes were very limited, which for me, as an investor, which is let's say more that wants takes a deeper look in the let's say in the body of the company, I need more than that. That was my experience. So I think also that Paul, that you should stick to your role. You have a lot of things to do, and the workload is significant. I mean, if my fear is that you, if you try to expand with all these different goals at the same time, you will deliver nothing.
I'll give you an example. That in the last FSB, they had a day on climate, and they thought, you know, they called us to translate all this work into this company disclosures. And I wondered what this group felt about this call on particularly climate changes and how it impacts financial reporting. All very, some people say, very speculative kind of work, so.
I think also if you try to include some of these very long-term statements in the financial statements, or you will end with boilerplates. Nothing that, I mean, it's all the aging of the population, or, I mean, okay, it does exist. I'm a bit afraid of losing the main target, the focus, that's the thing. That the thing. We have seen, for instance, that in some instances, the ISB had extreme difficulty to reach some consensus on some of the key projects, say, financial instruments or insurance, or, I mean, years of discussion just on the financial side. Just imagine that you include other aspects. I mean, please, do your proper job first, and then you perhaps on the, that's my message, I think.
I'd like to contribute as well. I agree with Paul's comments that the start point, the key area of focus should be the financial statements of the ISB. Although, and to me what's really differentiating the ISB, especially at this point in time, from the IRC, I mean, we can say ISB is principle based, but if you look at the framework of the IRC, it's very, very, very high level, and it should be very, very high level. There's nothing wrong with that. And if they can add rigor to that framework by looking at the ISB, how did you do that, and see if that's their responsibility, it's maybe even their duty, but it's their cup of tea. I don't expect the ISB at this point in time to come up with a review of the management commentary practice statement. I don't expect the ISB to do that. Also, maybe because it is covered by other organizations like the IRC at the moment. Does that make the ISB less relevant? No way, no way. It's a different reporting need to know the numbers and know the financials and know the financial statement and to understand the business model. I mean, that's two different, there are differences. You want to, in the end, relate those to each other, but it's not, I don't think it should be the focus of the ISB to do that. So, that's what I'd like to contribute. Oscar.
Yes, very much, yes, stick to the specialism. You've got a huge amount still to do. I can't see that, that there's value to be added in kind of moving away from that focus. The only thing that I would say is that you mentioned, you know, there's a list of other organizations involved in broader corporate reporting, this financial reporting. And I just wonder whether there's certain organizations or certain projects that you would be better placed to do. And the only reason I say that is I was at a meeting earlier this week where we had a presentation from the International Valuation Standards Council, and they talked about doing some work on valuation of financial instruments. And I don't know enough about this outfit, but it did concern me that they were doing things, or seemed to be doing things, without a huge amount of understanding knowledge. And this is just purely on a 1 hour presentation, so it could be wrong. We felt like
due to the small number of remaining conferences, this conference will be broken down in 40 minutes. Enter star 1 to cancel and continue the conference.
But it did feel to me that if there's people or organisations that are doing the work that really belongs within the specialist of the ISB, then maybe there's something to be done there to take that back.
Do you refer particularly to valuations?
Yeah, I think, and as I said, this is purely on the back of a meeting, that a presentation that I was audience member of, because it didn't feel to me like that was within their remit. It felt like an ISB project, if anything. And so I agree with Paul, I agree with everything that's been said, with that one caveat that if there's things going out up there that shouldn't be and should be within the ISB's remit, then you might want to kind of say to them, this is something that we would take forward.
Okay, thank you. Crash, please.
Yes, maybe my comment was a bit fluffy, but it's certainly biased by, by Brazilian connection. I think it's fairly amazing how IFRS became such a brand in Brazil, and I think most corporates in Brazil had a very strong relationship to American multinationals into America, and I was surprised back then, how Brazil embraced IFRS. So I think it's amazing, and which brings me to the point, which is, IFRS seems to be an amazing global brand. It's very difficult to get there.
How much goodwill do you think?
So,
in other months, can be
this is still my joke. It was
eternal generated.
We're not allowed to steal jokes.
It's all eternal.
So I think it's not correctly accounted for. Which is a shame, right? But looking at the brand, how would you treat the brand, right? You avoid extending it. You don't want your brand to be contaminated by other things, because you are known for excellent into something. You want to people to adopt the brand, so you do it to work, and obviously you're doing it all the time. So I'll give an example. The Swiss, they just decided, many Swiss companies just decided to leave IFRS, right? I think this is a major issue. I would treat this as a major issue. They cannot leave. Nobody can leave the standard, because you should protect the standard. So how to convince people not to leave it, right? And they have their own reasons, and the Swiss are different, I know. But so my point is, it's an amazing brand, and it should, obviously you can always reinforce the brand by doing other things on the side, but strong brands, maybe you can look at the problem differently. How can I use other people's efforts to improve the brand, make them work for you, not you work for them?
Presumably, I'm giving you the counter opinion. Presumably, we bring our excellence to other areas. So if you take the IFRS for SMEs as an example of where we took our expertise, our in-house expertise, and extended it to a standard that is not for the main, listed companies, and it has been a very successful standard, and we use the same due process as we use for everything, and we try to bring the excellence that we strive for in this organization to a different product. That's the argument said that, if you want real rigor in all these areas, you have to bring it into an organization that is well renowned for its process, and it has a grant. That's the
Mitch, please.
First thing that comes to mind is that, in this case, maybe it's okay to be half pregnant. or possible, in the sense that, anything that this organization can do to increase transparency and good corporate governance is a very, very good thing. So, but there's a way to extend and foster that evolution without overextension and consuming it in itself. Mm-hmm. So does it require more resources? Maybe that's one or two extra people to be outreach for these areas to make the connection. Because maybe there is a dialogue for for reporting when there is materiality in some of these ESG issues. Now, I think for me, I associate this organization most importantly with governance, which for me is the most acute of all issues in the ESG dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, anything that we as an organization do to foster transparency, dialogue, is going to be helpful in this area. So maybe there are issues in the longer nature that reach material sort of levels, and you might know we can have that discussion this afternoon, which would be an interesting one. But it's natural.
You mentioned ESG, what does that mean?
IFRS.
Maybe that's a signal that the ESG means IFRS.
Okay, we'll do it.
But I think there's nothing that should keep the organization from extending and fostering because it's the right thing to do and it actually makes sense. Maybe that requires additional resource, and it's natural that other organizations would come to the IFRS Foundation or the ISB for this because of the experts. But I agree, you don't want to dilute the expertise that it has. And if the issue, the downside is sort of the lack, risk that the organization doesn't lose its relevance, not in any case at all. The effort has to be continued to make the organization relevant in the issues that matter, and continue to be active and vocal and in front of people, and that that will never happen. So the onus is that this area has to do is also catching up to a lot with what this organization has already created. That's why that's, shall we say, an immature market. There's so many organizations that are already in it. Just like as industries evolve, there are hundreds of people that it matures and consolidates, blah blah blah. It's probably similar to that. And so I think there's no risk that this organization will lose its relevancy as long as it makes the onus is on itself to be relevant, and as far as becoming a regulator, no way. I mean, set the standard, be the expert, be the one who relies on, do not get involved in that morass, I would say, in my view.
Thank you, Mick. Robert.
I just wanted to highlight the difference in the conversation today about, we've been talking about financial reporting, not financial statements, and I think that really goes to the boundary issue about when MD&A or management commentary is important in the financial analysis. So to the extent that this organization should stick to the knitting, which is providing information on financial reporting, and then the question is, where is that boundary? Certainly environmental issues can have an impact on the financial reporting. So without defining, stick to your knitting, and then you're going to have to explore where that boundary is as you go into the other areas. It's interesting that the valuation came up as another sort of boundary area. That's it.
Goro, please.
Yes. I attended a Badley Council meeting this week, and we discussed this one, and particularly this particular topic I chaired, I have found that everybody here is the same opinion as a Badley Council's recommendation. I reiterate, ISB should stick to its core competence, namely that financial reporting. But at the same time, that such initiative as IIR, integrated reporting on corporate dialogues, that they do include financial reporting aspects. Mm-hmm. I think this is where that the ISB can collaborate them proactively. Particularly that we talked about the non-GAAP measure, et cetera, on the agenda consulting. And this integrated report or other reports may include this kind of non-GAAP information. Mm-hmm. So that I would say that the IASB should put some resources to look at the possibility of what kind of non-GAAP measures should be included in the financial statement as well. And this is also that the sometimes boundary issues with Robert rates.
Okay, going to the next question is where we basically have less clue what we're doing. And we really need help. So there's a lot of discussion nowadays, and people bringing us this comment about, you know, how will financial reporting change in view of technological development, and particularly as you know, big data analytics and people consuming information in so many different ways and can have access to so many databases and sets of information. What does that say, and what does it mean for financial reporting in general, and for IFRS in particular? And how we as an organization can make sure we are on top of these developments? So people, for example, mention that maybe structured reporting and will change in the future, and people will no longer consume information in this way. And what is it that we need to do to address that? And I think, as far as I've led these discussions so far, I don't think anybody has the right answer exactly what's going to happen, but really how to help us set out a process that we are sure that we are on top of these developments. So for example, one of the ideas we had is establish some sort of an expert group that we can consult on a regular basis to understand the developments in this area. And it's a question for this group as well. What's the sense, and what is the advice for us strategically? And even and if people see the future, it's good to know as well.
Anyway, Peter. Okay, Peter, please.
I think this is very important, because if you look at the, let's call it the global capital market, it is just increasing all the time. And neither the investment banks or the big asset managers knows exactly what market to cover, what companies to cover, and what you need to get into a market to come close to companies are normally something that is in a computer, a database of some sort. You don't start with the annual report and so on. You start, and definitely if you cover a couple of companies like in Sweden, you need to keep track of some competitors, one in Japan, four in the US and so on. You don't dig into the annual report for those companies and try to do the same kind of analysis that you do for your core companies. You need something that is much faster but still reliable. So definitely I think a taxonomy or whatever we are talking about is extremely important for the future. This big data or whatever you want to call it will become more and more important.
I should mention that we do describe in the paper our taxonomy strategy, basically that we of course will continue and commit to continue to develop the taxonomy.
Yes.
And to address, and we even now enforce.
So it's not as if we completely don't know what you're doing. I mean, you're investing a lot of resources in developing the XBRL.
Yeah, and we now, we strengthen the process of the taxonomy development to increase the involvement of the IASB. It's what beyond that is what we're asking, really. So it should be more accurate.
The XBRL, I'm not that impressed. Because we've
moved away from that. So our focus is on the content of the taxonomy.
To me, is something
not
more
the computer language,
and that can be used in
any product, any sort of technology.
I was in one of the breakout groups of the advisory council earlier in the week, and in that group, people were very sceptical about the taxonomy, and they said it was being required by regulators, but nobody was using the outputs.
Yeah, I don't think that's true. Now, I mean, what we use is that we pay a hell of a lot of money to some database providers and collect the data from them. So, but still, the quality of the data is questionable from time to time.
And the data providers do use this electronic.
Yeah. If they don't, they are quite stupid.
Okay, and I try to look into this one because if there's scope for improvement, it would be great that more market participants base their decision making on actual fundamental analysis. And what we observe, I think we can all observe, is that there's a group of analysts that have sufficient time to do their own analysis by really manually copying numbers from the PDFs into their Excel sheets.
No harm in that.
Yeah, yeah, no harm in that. But it is very time consuming. Very time consuming.
You know, and very,
very costly. Mm-hmm. So not many organizations can afford that. And then you have a huge group of market participants that base their fundamental analysis on those data providers. And they have 2,000 people anywhere in the world who do this work for you, but you lose a lot. Because you lose a lot because they provide only one view of granularity for the entire globe. And I think if you could argue that the technology challenge here is that somehow there's a better bridge between those data files and the Excel sheet of the analyst. And I understand it is not the responsibility of the ISB to start creating code, but there are ways to stimulate that market, that there will be firms and that they are stimulated in a way to come up with useful, neat solutions that help transfer these XBRL, whatever files, into Excel for the analyst on a coded basis. And there, there's something in between, saying one, we are going to create code that helps those analysts, and the other way, oh, that's none of our business. There's something in between, and I think it's worth for the ISB to explore that area where they can maybe stimulate development in a way without taking the responsibility of the end product.
I tried to test the quality of databases by see if they calculate net debt. I know they are lying. Because we don't have any accounting standard telling us what to include in net debt. So obviously they are guessing, and the companies don't provide information. Not all the companies.
Okay.
So to me, I think it's
you agree.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Actually, I think you said pretty much everything I wanted to say in terms of the importance of that taxonomy for allowing data providers to provide the information much more quickly. I mean, we spend a huge amount of time and a huge number of people getting the PDFs from financial reports or the three reports in the case of banks, putting into spreadsheets, making adjustments to try and make it consistent. And the taxonomy would go, if it was effective, would go a long way towards kind of helping that process. And I think that kind of, just turning the slides, the next question is about consistent application. Well, guess what? I think use of a taxonomy would go a long, long, long way towards getting much more consistent application and comparability across financial statements. And that's absolutely fundamental for any kind of meaningful peer analysis.
But we tried to crack the mystery of why the taxonomy is not taking off as you would expect. For example, all the benefits that you were just saying, it's the expectation that we have in this organization at some point. Mm-hmm. Having said that, we all feel that the full potential of our taxonomy work is being, leveraged around the world.
And
I think there's something around the reliability of information, to what extent regulators are really paying attention to the quality of the information reported by companies on the digital reporting. So it's a real mystery for us why this such amazing product is not taking off and changing the world.
I find that very interesting, and maybe it kind of reflects on my lack of knowledge, because I was under the impression that taxonomy is not yet fully developed, and that's why it's not being used. And that, so it's kind of kicking back the issue to you, is that I wasn't of the, and maybe it's lack of knowledge, but I wasn't of the impression that it was fully developed, it's not being used, it's underdeveloped. That's
it's fully developed. It really follows on all the standards that we have. It's just not fully used. What's interesting. So not all regulators demand it. When they demand it, not all of them demand the whole set. So they take parts of it. So obviously people don't get the full information they might need.
So apparently ESMA is now proposing that PDFs are enough. No?
Yeah, PDFs are enough.
Incredible. I mean, that's, how future-proof are we? Yes.
I want to share perhaps an experience. I was part of a meeting in Europe, I think it was 7 years ago. The Forum was there. And the last slide we had
after a presentation is, please, we need your help. So I think Xbera has been around for years, and nobody has been buying it. Nobody. So, I mean, this is perhaps an extremely seducing, appealing product, but there are no customers. And, I mean...
You mean the XBRL technology or the taxonomy?
Both. I'm a little bit afraid. I mean, you should ask yourself the question of why has it not started? Mm-hmm. It has been around, nobody uses it. It might be not pleasant, but...
Be honest, are just in love with their own little spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what is happening.
So if the data aggregators are giving the analysts information, then why would they need taxonomy if the data aggregators are all...
Because it's not granular enough.
Okay. I like the comment very practical of Peter saying, for example, I'm using some databases.
Have joined the conference.
This is for very preliminary figures of having rough idea of what could be the company if I had an investment strategy, what company I could play. So I'm looking for that on a database on something. Then after having a shortlist, I'm taking the annual reports after to check. It's very, very different. So it's a very limited scope, I believe.
It's almost a religious discussion. Some people are just, and we are, from our house perspective, sorry, I don't know the term, but, and also clients and prospects that we talk to want to know that the analysts are actually doing the work and putting, at a minimum, their signature on the numbers that go in. And, I do have some gray hair, and I think that, as an old school analyst, I also think there is some benefit from copying numbers from a PDF to the physicality of copying numbers from a spreadsheet into from a PDF or whatever into a spreadsheet. You actually see the numbers, and that's when you realize,
that's stupid.
I think maybe why there isn't a take rate as much on that, because to your point, we use Bloomberg actually to draw down data and create ratios and blah, 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 instead of screens and a ridiculous amount of relative value. But at the end of the day, when analysts are presenting the numbers, in some cases maybe it's okay, but really, we really want to drill down and get to know a company, the physicality of taking the numbers from a PDF file into a spreadsheet, there's such a leverage of impact of your knowledge of the company that's actually doing it. And that's all. Then going to the MD&A and then reading it, these kinds of things. So it's a religious discussion. Maybe it's a hedge fund that is just doing technical trading and just needs some basic ratios. Maybe, it varies. So.
Okay, I'd like to remind all participants that if you want to contribute to the discussion, please raise your hand because it's very difficult to chair. Goro, please.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, this kind of technologies, the analysts and investors do not have any expertise in the XBRL type things. Actually, that the Japan mandate that the preferred to register that the financial statement with XBRL, and that they at the FSA site that we can download XBRL, but I simply cannot do. But I can do that with that.
Yes.
So that the but.
So it's mandated and nobody uses it in Japan. That's
yes.
What
you said. I guess that there are some who are very familiar with the technologies. That they can translate these XBRL data into their Excel. But these guys are very few. And basically, that's the job of the technology department people, not the investment or the research. So and at the same time that this kind of technology is a really good thing for data aggregators like Bloomberg, etc. And unlike that the IIFC or limit, these data and differs based data. So I think that to ensure that these numbers are right and exactly the same as the numbers which we see on paper financial statement is within the limit of IFRS Foundation. And also, you know, the, I think it is a good thing for, it might be a, you know, source of additional revenue to IFRS Foundation. Mm-hmm. And the, if you can collaborate with the data aggregators such as Bloomberg, Reuters, etc., I think that the quality of database will, the quality of database they provide will improve quite really significantly, and this data will be you know, provided on a timely basis, and that is a benefit for users. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that you, yeah, I think it's a very good idea to, for you to have a
consultant.
Okay, thank you, Goro. Before Peter, Barbara has a comment.
Because we only have a few minutes left, I wanted to make sure we're answering the question you're asking, because we're focusing on taxonomy quite a bit.
I thought that the two main questions are there. So I'm
on technology, are we addressing the question?
If people can see the wider context of technology.
It's not just taxonomy that we're talking about. We're talking about other sources of technology people may use when they're thinking about financial reporting and how we may fit into that. That's quite a vague comment, but it's not just the taxonomy.
But we have a question on taxonomy.
Okay. Just want to make sure we're answering your question.
Yeah.
Okay, Peter, please.
Yeah. Having worked for a firm that sort of built a competitive advantage on taxonomy, I think it's key that we do that correctly. And it strikes me that it's distribution of the taxonomy that's an issue here. And I want to bring it back to something that we talked about earlier. Seeing as capital markets talk a lot about numbers that are non-GAAP, I think bringing taxonomy into this mix so that we can understand with a very simple sort of computer solution how to connect IFRS numbers to non-GAAP numbers would help us a lot, because now there's just no clarity on these things, and that's just one technology improvement that you can make to make us understand what it is that we're talking about when we see certain numbers. So this is a big one.
Yeah.
Thank you, Peter.
Peter.
Very quick. A lot of large Swedish companies actually present fact books in the shape of an Excel spreadsheet. And this has increased over the years, particularly among the banks, but also in other companies. So I think that shows that the demand for a quick way to get into the figures is actually there.
Yeah.
It's one thing with the recent figures, the last year and the previous year, but then if you want like a 6-year trend or something, then you are quite satisfied with using, I think, fact book numbers from an Excel spreadsheet.
Has anybody standardized?
No.
Fact book,
and they are fairly compressed also. And definitely when they present like quarterly figures also, because we have all the companies present quarterly reports. But they are fairly compressed, so if you want to dig into a number like something unusual that happens going up and down, then you have to go to the original.
Yeah.
Thank you, Peter. Mitch?
Just last quick comment or question really, Martin, for you is, are you kind of suggesting that the IFRS or the ISE should consider sort of sanctioning or putting a signature on approved method of taking numbers from, you know, okay, sort of
no.
Brand,
no. I don't think that's. I think there's a role for to stimulate, to bring the data to the ultimate spreadsheet, and not so much take responsibility for that, but to make sure that there are almost free available tools, or somehow there are tools to stimulate the development of tools by a third party, and so because there's. As I think Jacques already described, the files are there, nobody uses them because it's too big. There's few people who know how to process the data, and for an individual investor, it's an insurmountable job to make a tool himself.
Yeah.
And the tool is going to be very similar for all investors if it were there, because 95% of investors use Excel. And the data is not Excel. I mean, and it's not coded. You need something more. You need something to link it to. Marietta, do you have anything to add to this discussion? Marietta? Thank you, Marietta.
I'm happy to, you know, I can present the rest of it, but I didn't think particularly this group would be interested in the rest of the questions unless anybody wants to comment. Does he want me to shorten it?
Can I just flag up one, yeah. And Paul will recognise this, okay. From the Eurocrf meeting last month, is that what we're saying, we're looking at the three-tier structure.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The board sets the standards, the trustees oversee the board, and we're all accountable to the monitoring board. And we're saying, we think that structure works, we're not looking to change it, but are there ways in which the functioning might be improved? Now, one of the reasons for the structure we have is to protect the independence of the board. And for those of you within the European Union, and apologies to the others for being Eurocentric, EFRAG in its draft comment letter has said, well, why can't the trustees, they look at the due process, but why can't they challenge the substance? And when EFRAG mentioned that at the Eurocrf meeting, certainly Paul's ears and those of certain others went up. And I think that's going to be a feature of the Crf response. So I just wanted to highlight that to you, that if you are responding, if you're thinking it's fine, if you think, oh, I won't bother to respond, please do. Okay.
It's in slide 10, and basically what we would be interested to know is if independence of the board is important to you, please
yeah.
Say that.
Should the trustees dig into the technical and the individual standard setting process? Standard setting.
I don't think so, but let me go differently. We joked about the brand. Without independence, the brand is worthless. Period. It's the existential risk to the ISB is independence. And meddling by different stakeholders in the agenda, in the substance, is risks destroying the whole construct. I cannot emphasize the importance of independence enough.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I strongly agree with that, that the independence of the board is vitally important and must be maintained, and the avoidance of the politicisation of the standard setting process is so important for the standards to have value to the market, and we must stand behind that.
I just want to concur with that. I mean, it's I also agree that the board, the trustees should not dig into individual standards, but look at the process.
Yep. The same comments, and even for French people.
Some French.
That's why I put it this way. Completely correct. It's absolutely necessary, and I'm quite pleased that
Marietta
has resisted to some pressure at the outside pressure.
Have joined the conference.
It's not a pleasant moment for them.
Yeah.
That's it. But that's part of the job, and
yeah.
I want them to be independent.
I think we can conclude this topic.
Sorry, also, I didn't have anything to say on this independence, but I want to just have a different comment, if
yeah.
I may.
Okay.
Talking about consistent application,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is very important, and the slightly different thing that I wanted to say is that you talk about the education initiative
mm-hmm.
in the context of consistent application, which is great. But I think I wouldn't want to lose the work that you've done to date in terms of education initiative for investors.
Yes.
And I think actually that needs to be built on a lot more, because what I'm finding is that when I'm trying to educate my analysts about accounting, I will go to the ISB's website and look at the
mm-hmm.
investor education sources, and they're very, very basic. And maybe that's because you're an early stage,
yes.
but it needs to be kind of stepped up. So I would hope that the education initiative is not just focused on the preparers, it should be, and that's what it seems to be from the paper at the moment. So just to kind of just reiterate the call for investor education as well.
You raise a very important question. I actually didn't mean to cover it here, but now that you mention it, I mean, I think it's correct, and we don't see this as one on expense of the other. We see it as two very different streams of work that we generate. The one thing I think we did put a question here on our funding model. Our funding model is quite complex, and as you know, I mean, we are a stable organization. We've been very successful in raising the level of our reserves, and there's no risk, financial risk for the organization. And we have a model by which around two-thirds of our contribution come from publicly sponsored organizations and all sorts of governmental agencies. We have a source of funding from the accounting firms, which you would expect given the interest, and we have a self-generated income. Whenever we tried in the past to target investors as contributors to this organization, we've been completely unsuccessful. Completely unsuccessful. And it's kind of interesting because what we do is for that shows you success.
I will stand by
Now, I'm not asking it in the context of the general funding, but you know we have a huge shortfall of funding from the U.S., for example, and part of the solution we thought about from the U.S. was to target U.S. investors, because in the reality that U.S. investors use IFRS extensively for all their external portfolios. And it's interesting to see this. No appetite or interest, or so it's interesting to see how. I mean, what do these institutions see us as their value? Because if they're not willing to pay, obviously they don't see the value.
Well, maybe first question.
Yes.
What did Paris contribute?
Mm? Paris contribute.
Yeah. So every euro, dollar, whatever yen that Paris contribute is out of the pocket of investors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the investors are the ultimate beneficiaries of the preparers.
I
disagree that investors are not contributing because we are. And it would be double taxation for investors. Post-implementation review. I think the post-implementation review could be an excellent tool. But if I hear how investors regard the results of the post-implementation review of IFRS 8, I think there is a lot of feeling about it could have been so much better.
Yeah.
It could have been so much better, and I think it's got to do with the scope that the post-implementation review sets for itself, that it should only address problems and solve issues instead of okay, we had this new standard, we're going to review it, and how can we make it so much better? And I feel a lot of disappointment.
What's the difference? What's the difference between finding out what the problems are and trying to make it better?
Well, we observe a difference between, I think, the post-implementation review very much highlighted many concerns of investors. And we're 2 years down the line, and there was a lot of comments about the old risk and return criterion, about comparability, and it's not been top of mind in improving somehow. I'm not sure if anyone else on the table has the same ideas about IFRS 8 post-implementation review.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we need to maybe one of the things we should think about for future ones is, because it's not the first time I've heard that,
yeah.
Is being careful with the questions that we ask when we go out, and maybe getting some more input earlier in the process,
yeah,
in terms of whether people feel we're asking the right questions. Of course, we're trying to get a balance between not reopening absolutely everything, but it's fair to make sure people think we're asking the questions that they think need to be asked. So maybe we should think about that.
But you know, no matter what kind of questions we ask, if there's a widespread feeling that the standards is complete rubbish, people will tell us. And I don't think that we were told that.
I think we were told that.
Yeah. And the perhaps recommendation, I don't know if it's workable, but in the US, the post-immigration review are not done by the FASB itself.
They now are.
They're changing that.
Yeah, they're changing.
Yeah. But
for the worse.
I don't think there's an improvement.
I don't think there's something wrong with the ISB doing the post-implementation review. It's just that...
Who else should do the data? So that in the beginning that their foundation did it, we're not qualified to do that kind of...
Yeah, but what they did was they seconded staff from the FASB to the FAP.
That's what I said.
So it was for sure.
Okay.
Regardless of what data, if you think that our process should be, improved in the sense that, as Sue said, it's whether you didn't like the answer or you thought the process was wrong. And if you don't like the answer, it's one thing. But if you think the process was wrong in the sense that the questions were not far enough, or we're not focusing on the right issues, that's a question.
My impression was that the post implementation review generated all the valid comments from investors, and somehow that the hurdle for between addressing problems and making it so much better was put to addressing maybe problems and not to really
hasn't gone
to
far
another
enough.
Way.
You think?
Yeah.
So I think. We can always improve early days of post-implementation reviews so we can look at the process. Point taken.
It's, we're eating out for lunchtime. If there are no other questions at this moment, I would like to close the session for lunch.
We have some, can I members stay for a few minutes, please? And we want to just do a few words.